Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Lost your keys? Calgary Lock & Safe can rekey or recode your locks. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.
Welcome back. Hour two of the program is underway, and we say hello to the one and only Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider and hockey night in Canada. Hello, Friedge. How are you?
I'm good, Pat. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. And lots to get into from over the weekend. That was an eventful weekend in the Final Four. And I wanted to start with what, and maybe you haven't noticed the same thing, but I certainly noticed Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night, the discourse on Twitter was very much about officiating and how poor it has been to this point. Have you noticed how loud the officiating conversation has been, and has it been any different than years past from your perception?
I think every year there's complaints. The thing that surprised me last night was I had a lot more people who responded to me than, or just texted me than normally do. I for whatever reason, that game in particular was, it seemed to really bother people. I think to me, the thing that bothered, that I kind of sensed and it bothered me too, was after everything that kind of got not called, that the first penalty was that Suzuki hook on Martinez, mm-hmm. and people are like, if you're gonna let everything else go, why are you calling that? And I just think that it's an impossible standard to maintain on players. And when, like, I like hard, tough hockey, I don't want a ton of penalties called, I really don't. But, and I think if you do, the amount, there's gonna be a ton of people who complain about that. You're not gonna make everything happy. But what I like is some shred of consistency. And I thought last night, seeing what wasn't called and then seeing what was, it's like that same call on Adam Pellick when he interfered with Kucherov in Game 3 of the Islanders series. I mean, you're going to let everything go, and that's a penalty that gives Tampa a power play that helps decide the game. I don't think that's right. The one call, the one penalty I think that they have to start calling more now, though, is boarding. Because people could get hurt. I really think the boarding thing, it's out of control. And there were a couple last night that weren't called that I was just like, you can't not call those. And I'm sure other people feel differently. That's how I feel.
Do you feel like the inconsistencies have been any different than any other recent postseason, like in the actual officiating? Because maybe it's been a louder conversation, but what about the actual job on the ice? Has it been any different than what you're used to?
No, I don't think so. Like, I have a saying, and some people have really been coming at me about it in the last few days, which is fine, that I don't think the refereeing changes in the playoffs. I think the players do. And I still believe that. I really do. I think the players change more than the officiating does. I think if people complain about officiating, they've got a lot of the same complaints in the regular season that they do in the playoffs. But I just think the last, like the Corey Perry missed call, I didn't like it. But, hey, I'm not perfect either. Missed calls happen. But when you look at the Pellick penalty, that missed high stick, what happened last night, and McDavid not getting a single call against him in the first round, mm-hmm. I just think with every perceived grievance or every grievance, it gets louder, and we're at the loud point right now.
Yeah. No doubt about that. It's definitely been loud. Okay, so
I just, like, Pat, like I just said, like last night, I don't know what the right solution is, but you're watching everything that doesn't get called. And like I said, I think boarding has to be something they start calling. And then you see that penalty called and you're like, what? Like, how are players supposed to adjust to that?
Yep. Agreed. And that was the only thing that I guess the only thing that jumped out is how many, like, prominent people on Twitter. And maybe that's the thing that has been so noticeable for me, is that we're not just talking about, the regular fans of each team talking about it, which you expect and you understand, but Now you're getting like some pretty prominent NHL insiders and reporters talking about it too. That has been the most noticeable thing for me.
Well, I think one of the things is that, like, I can only speak for myself. I don't like piling on people. Like, I really don't. I know what that feels like, and it's not a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that you reach a point where you have to say something, right? And I just think that game last night, it was hard not to look at the referee standing there, looking at everything, and then the call that was made. It just didn't make sense.
Yep. Let's move from that to what's happening with Montreal. Dominique Ducharme will not be back behind their bench anytime soon as he goes through his mandatory isolation. But I guess the relief would be that we haven't, over the last couple of days, have not seen any Habs players added to the COVID list. That would have to be a massive relief for everyone involved.
Well, absolutely. You know, as a matter of fact, I can't do it right now, but I should check the COVID list as soon as I stop driving. As a matter of fact, I'm pulling into somewhere right now so I can actually do that. What's the date today?
Today, by the way, is the 21st of June. As of right now,
nobody's there. Yeah. No players added to the COVID list. So, Pat, you should tweet that out while we're talking. And when I finish, because I don't want to write it.
Well, how about, have you pulled over yet? I can buy you some time if you want to write it right now.
No, it's okay. But that's the key thing. So, you know, I think, like, first of all, you're surprised about Ducharme and you're surprised about McCrimmon. But the number one thing you're looking at is what happens if this gets to players? Like, if you look at the NBA, the Western Conference Final, Chris Paul of the Phoenix Suns, he's not playing right now because of that. So you're sitting there and you're going, uh-oh, you know, what does this mean? Is it going to spread? And the best possible news right now is that it doesn't look like it's spreading. I think you're really hoping by now in Montreal, you're out of the woods, knock on wood, but, you know, you're still a little nervous, and certainly Vegas, you're just nervous. You don't want to see the players get affected because, you know, one of the things that Bettman told the teams before the playoffs was they don't have time to wait for teams if there's an outbreak. So if you get an outbreak, you're gone. Right. And nobody wants to see that happen right now.
Yeah. What did you make of Pete DeBoer's decision to go with Robin Lehner last night? And how do you see it playing out as we move into Game 5 tomorrow night?
Well, you got to think that you got to think Leonard's playing Game 5, right?
Yeah. You'd think so.
So, yeah. So that's what you think. You know, I have mixed reactions. Number one, I wouldn't have done it. I would have stuck with the guy that, hey, you bring it. You ask someone to the dance. You bring a date to the dance. You dance with that date. Okay, and that's the way I would have done it. But I will say this. There's two things. Number one, Peter DeBoer, he's got a spine. That is a guy who is not afraid to make tough decisions. And not only that, he doesn't care what you think about his decisions. He's paid, in his eyes, to make a call, and he makes the call. And that's what he did. Number two, everything that the Golden Knights have done in the last 15-16 months, trading for Robin Lehner, signing Robin Lehner to an extension, almost trading Marc-Andre Fleury to Pittsburgh, says to me that they don't 100% believe in Fleury, and that they believe more in Lehner than they do in Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
That the guy who really stands in the way of that a bit is the owner, who's very loyal to Fleury. So what that says to me is that Peter DeBoer's guy is probably Lehner, and when the opportunity presented itself, he was going to Lehner. And I got to think he's going back to him tomorrow night.
Interesting. Just one more on the postseason. Game 5, Islanders-Tampa. This thing has been as close as it comes. Just your impressions of the first four games between the Islanders and the Lightning?
Well, I think we've been very fortunate. I think the semifinals, like, all I ever hope for as a fan are long, intense, good series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, here we go in the first round. We had, I think, five series that went to game six and seven. In the second round, we had no game sevens, but I think we had two game sixes and some good series. And this round, we know they're both going at least six. And they've been tight, and they've been incredibly competitive. Like, all I ask for is entertainment. I'm getting entertained. I got nothing to complain about. And whatever this, and that Islander-Tampa series, I think Tampa's better. But the way the Islanders play, it keeps them in every game. And they're giving Tampa all they can handle.
By the way, I got a notification on Twitter from Elliot Friedman. No players.
I started driving again. Yes, I finished my tweet and I started driving again.
No players added to COVID list today. From Free JHNIC on Twitter. Well done, as per usual. Doing the 900
things. I
gotta
tell you, by the way.
Yeah.
I gotta tell you, by the way, Pat. I know you guys in Calgary like to make fun of Toronto drivers. There is some awful driving going on in Toronto today. Like, I am at my Captain Aggression is coming out here. So hopefully I don't bounce off anything while we're talking.
Okay, and no four-letter bombs if you drive by.
No, those, I mutter those under my breath. I save them for when the hit's done.
I like that. Elliot Friedman's with us. Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet NHL Insider, every Monday on the program. Rick Tocchet, would it be fair to say, now that he's had his third interview in Seattle, he would be the front runner for their first ever coaching job?
I think so, but it's weird. I have to tell you that, you know, first of all, for me, like, just anybody out there who's listening to this right now, if you've had three job interviews, you pretty much think you're getting the job, right?
Yeah.
But that hasn't happened yet. I'm not exactly sure what's going on. I believe it was him and someone else who was in Seattle last week. I'm not 100% sure who the other person is. I think a lot of the names that they've interviewed have been out there. Two names I heard last week that I hadn't heard before were Joe Sacco and Tony Granato. And the reason I think, they said that it's going to be someone who's a former head coach in the NHL, and both those guys have been head coaches. I think it's most likely Tocchet. Like, I heard Dave Quinn went pretty far into the process. I think it's most likely Tocchet, but nothing's ever done until it's done. And, Ron Francis, man, he's not exactly a sieve. It's tough to get info out of there.
Fort Knox, eh? It's tough to get any information. What, any other coaching stories, coaching news that you're watching right now?
Well, Arizona, like, I think they're talking to Mike Van Ryan. I think they're talking to Todd Nelson. I think they're talking to Andre Tourneau. They might be talking to Nate Lehman. I think there's someone else in there. I'm not sure now. They're going to wait to talk to Lane Lambert. We'll see. Buffalo, I don't know what Buffalo's doing. I suspect I know some of the people they've talked to. They met with Don Granato last week. I don't know exactly what's going on there, to be honest.
Was that you laying on your horn?
No, that was somebody. That was not me. I don't like to do that while I'm on radio. It was funny. I saw exactly what happened, though. A guy was waiting to turn right. His light went red. The other light went green. And in just one of those typical idiot moves, they started making the turn as the other light went green, and this other guy almost hit him.
I had to turn my mic off because Logan and I just died when we heard that.
I don't know what's going on here. I'll tell you just what happened right in front of me. I'm driving behind someone, and, like, you know how you're at a green light, you're coming up to it, and you see the light counting down, like, 5, 4, 3. As we got to, like, 3, they could have easily gone through the intersection, but they just slowed down and waited. And I was like, normally I would have leaned on the horn, but I'm not doing that while I'm on radio.
Appreciate it. You are.
I just don't have a lot, like, I don't know what it is. I just I'm not really a road rage kind of guy, but stupid driving just it makes me. I'm very aggressive, and it just makes me crazy.
Hey, you're preaching to the choir over here. You don't need to explain. You don't miss a beat. You got bad drivers. You got a tweet about the COVID list and do a hit on radio. You're doing a hell of a job.
Well, I pulled over for that one. Like I don't screw around with driving and tweeting. That's a really bad idea.
Agreed. What is happening with Oliver Ekman-Larsson and the Arizona Coyotes? Because it sounds, you reported on headlines on Saturday, wants to be traded but going to do it a little bit differently than the way he did it last offseason, right?
Well, I think it's both sides. Like I think there's an understanding here that the Coyotes want to move on, and I think that the player wants to move on too. Like one of the things I hear about Ekman-Larsson is he needs a new start. That, you know, it's just gotten a bit stale for both him and franchise, and he needs somewhere to go else to go and kind of rejuvenate himself. And, you know, last year he said fine, but only Boston or Vancouver. He's got a no-move clause, so he has control. And this year, you know, I think they said, look, you make a deal, you come to us, and we'll decide if, you know, we want to go there. So I know it's not a guarantee that he gets traded wherever, but I think that he's willing to consider more places than he was last year, and there seems to be a willingness on both sides to work together to get something done.
When you take a look at that contract, he's still got, 6 years left?
And there's a bonus payment, I think, next year. There's a 5.5 bonus payment next July 1, I think. That's what it is.
How much interest do you see in him knowing that contract and what's left on it?
Well, I think there's going to be interest. There's always interest in defensemen, but it's one of those things where, you know, is Arizona going to have to take money? Is Arizona going to have to take another contract? It comes down to, can the two sides work out a deal? Like, you know, you saw Cam Neely last week said, we need a big left-hand shot D, like a minute guy, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he could be that guy. And they've had interest in him before. And obviously he's interested in them. But, you know, would Arizona have to eat money for 5 years? Would Arizona have to take John Moore's contract? You know, what's the balance? How do you get this to work? And I think that's going to be, you know, one of the questions that we have here is how are we going to make this all work for Boston or anybody else?
A few more with Elliot Friedman. 1 week ago, you reported Dougie Hamilton has been given permission by Carolina to talk to some other teams, potentially exploring a sign and trade. How busy have talks been, in your estimation, with Dougie Hamilton and other teams since last Monday?
Well, I think, you know, CJ talked about it on headlines on Saturday night. I think pretty much every team, if not every team, has reached out and asked about him. So I don't think there's any hurry to get anything done here. I think overall, when it comes to moves in the league, Pat, I think the expansion draft has tied up a lot of things. So I don't think, like, one of the things that happens here is if you're a team that's got some expansion issues, are you really eager to go out and add Dougie Hamilton, or do you wait until after?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we're in any hurry, but I just think everybody knows what the situation is.
You talked with the boys on Friday morning about Seattle. That could be a realistic landing spot for him, you think, hey?
Sorry, what was that, Pat?
You talked with the boys on Friday about Seattle and that being a potential landing spot. Like that could be realistic for Dougie?
I think so. Like, I mean, there's a lot of, like, I confess, there's a lot of conjecture on that one. It's a lot of circumstantial evidence. But
Ron Francis is a guy who believes in defense, and he built his team with defense in Carolina, and there's a lot of good defensemen available. I could see it. Like, they could do a heck of a lot worse than adding him, that's for sure.
And finally, a couple people on our text line want me to ask about, are you hearing, people feel it's too quiet coming out of Calgary. What say you on what you're hearing, if anything, from the Flames?
I just don't think that they're, I'm not expecting, like, they made the changes to the coaching staff, adding in Kirk Muller. Like, I expect that Tree Living is going to be back. I'm not expecting that to change. I just think that at this point in time, it looks like you should expect the GM back, and I think they're working on their decisions about the roster and the expansion draft.
Yeah. Great stuff as always, Freach. Have a good evening, my friend. We'll see you in a few hours on television. Thank you, pal.
All right, Pat. I got to tell you, driving out here today, like, I don't know. Like, if I look like even more like a mad scientist or enraged, everybody listening to this is going to know that the driving today did me in.
Just be safe, okay?
Of course. I just want to – I'm just short fuse right now, short fuse.
Talk to you next week. Thanks, Freach.
All right. Take care, man. Bye.
Elliot Friedman, brought to you by Calgary Lock & Safe. Having issues with your automatic doors not working properly? Calgary Lock & Safe can help.